This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. The latest big suicide bombing in Iraq struck a funeral. An attacker set off an explosion in Mosul yesterday. It tore through a tent full of people and killed 47. It was a funeral for a Shiite Muslim professor, and it was being held at a mosque. That bombing underlined Iraq's ethnic and religious divisions, even as one political division was worked out. Shiite and Kurdish politicians agreed on a government yesterday. According to their deal, the president will be a Kurd, while the prime minister will be Shiite.
U.S. military officials know that in the long term, Iraq's new government will only survive if it can defend itself. And that's why they're focusing on the training of Iraqi troops. Yesterday, we reached U.S. Army Lieutenant General John Vines. He's one of the senior military officials in Iraq. And Vines said many Iraqis have at least a little training, but their ability varies widely.
There are well over 140,000 security forces of all types that have been trained. Some have rudimentary police training. Some have more specialized police training. And some of the Army forces have training in conducting of the counterinsurgency operations and to conduct combat. So it can be a bit confusing when you try to assign a specific number because some have no more training than to protect facilities such as oil wells or oil transmission lines.
Well, when you strip those distinctions away, I suppose the way that you might phrase it as an American wondering when American troops can come home is how many Iraqis are ready to replace Americans.
There are two brigades that have already assumed responsibilities for an area, and those are Iraqi formations enabled by coalition forces. They have primary responsibility for an area. If we try to put a timeline on it, I think that is not an effective way of looking at it. We have to look at it in terms of the capability of the units, and we have to look at it in terms of the threat that they're operating against. I expect that there will be fewer American forces at the end of this year than there are now because the Iraqi capability is growing very rapidly.
General, as you know, Syria has been accused by U.S. officials of providing sanctuary or support to the insurgency at different times. How would you evaluate Syria's activities right now?
I suspect that there are elements in Syria that are beyond the control of the Syrian government that are providing aid and assistance to insurgents. I think that is beyond dispute. Syria is making some efforts. I think it would be helpful if they continue to attempt to control their borders and attempt to ensure that there's not money and foreign-trained terrorists infiltrating into Iraq. We have indicators that that is happening.
Do you think that Syrian territory is still being used as a base for attacks into Iraq?
I think that is beyond dispute. Whether or not there's any participation by the Syrian government, I have no way of knowing.
The New York Times reported that you assigned a number of books to staff officers to read there in Iraq. It's a fascinating list, and I'd like to pick two books off that list and just get you to tell me why you think those books are important. The first one would be The Clash of Civilizations by Samuel P. Huntington. Why that book?
It's important to understand that, in fact, there are different cultures at work, and in fact, there's an element of extremism that's loose in the world, and it's some of it has taken root here. We're contending with jihadists who think they have the worldview that man has no right to determine their own conditions. They have no right to make laws because all laws flow from God, and they think democracy is anti-Islamic. And that is an extreme view. It's not widely held, but Zarqawi and some of his ilk believe that it is their right to impose their views on the entire population of this region.
And, of course, there are other books here that are basically primers to Islam, which makes perfect sense given the country that you're in. And then there's a book here called Dereliction of Duty, Lyndon Johnson, Robert McNamara, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the Lies That Led to Vietnam by H.R. McMaster. Why have your staff officers read that one?
We're putting the lives of coalition members at risk every day. And we have to understand that we have a moral, ethical, and legal obligation not to risk the lives of young men and women unless we're doing it for a purpose that we understand, that has the full consent of the American people and the backing of the United States government. And so on a daily basis, I analyze that to make sure that when we ask someone to take a risk, that we're doing everything we can to mitigate the risk, to keep it as low as we can, and the reason that we're asking them to take that risk is worth it. That is a calculus that I go through every day of my life over here.
You're trying to apply lessons that you feel were learned in Vietnam.
I think that there were mistakes made in Vietnam that we would be professionally irresponsible not to know about, and not to make sure that we don't repeat here.
Well, General Vines, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Lieutenant General John Vines commands U.S. and Allied forces in Iraq.